Put it out. Do you hear me? Put it out. Tonight on Sheet Metal Workshop. No, that's something else. Okay. I'm Ken Hankey, and I'm the movie reviewer for one of the movie reviewers. I had to stop and think what it was I do. And I'm one of the movie reviewers at the Mountain Express, and this is...
I'm Justin Souther, I'm the other film critic with the Mountain Express.
and together, we are Elitist Bastards. And
well, we are separately as well.
That's true, too. Yes, probably, yes. I think we get a little more bastardly as a team, but that's another story altogether. And we are coming to you where?
It's like
from
that Vonnegut novel where twins are really stupid when they're...
That's probably...
But they're geniuses when they're together.
Somehow related, yes.
Where are we, Ken? We're in the Cinema Lounge.
Yes,
at the Carolina Asheville on Hendersonville Road.
Yes. And...
we've been to the movies.
We've been to the movies, yeah. And now we're going to inflict that knowledge that we have gained from those trips to the movies on you. I understand you went to see Bill Cunningham, New York.
Yes.
Ah.
I did see it.
Well, tell us about it.
Well, first, I guess we should preface this by saying it's going to be gone after Thursday.
Well, yeah, that's only relevant, though, if you are living in Asheville. And presumably there are people... not living in Asheville, that might
hear
this.
We have no proof of this.
We have no proof, that's true. Yes, we do.
Well, they might hear it.
No. We know one person in England and one person in Australia who listens to it. And I know somebody in Canada, so that's at least three. No, I know two people in Canada, that's at least four.
They listen to it?
Yes.
Or you just know them?
No. I know more people than that in both places, but I know four who actually listen to this damn thing.
Okay.
All right, go ahead.
Well... wherever you might encounter this film.
Yes, if you do.
Yes. I'm not a fan of documentaries. As a rule, we're both in the same boat.
Pretty much.
I was sort of dreading... not dreading, but I didn't...
not looking forward to it.
I wasn't excited by the prospects of this. The film's about Bill Cunningham, who does street-style photography for the New York Times. He did stuff for Details. And
well, those offer you slightly more interesting streets than we're used to.
Yes, yes. And he has a lot of, like, goes to social events and fundraisers and stuff and takes pictures of celebrities and things like that. His filmmaking, it's fine. What makes this movie as enjoyable it is Bill Cunningham, who's just this sort of... he's in his 80s now. He's very just... has a smile on his face the whole time. He's friendly to everyone. He just rides around on his bicycle taking people's photos. It's sort of... he's very endearing. And sort of like...
he manages to do this without seeming simple-minded?
No, definitely not. No, he seems very intelligent. Like,
well, I mean, you know, you talk about someone who has a smile on their face all the time.
He's just very, like, happy with what he's done.
Okay.
Like, he found... he's one of the people that has found an occupation he really enjoys and has managed to do something with it, even though
haven't.
I don't know about you. How do you feel? Exactly.
Yeah, I have to think about it.
But a lot of the movie is this dichotomy between him and his, I guess you could call it, an obsession with fashion, and the fact that he lives this very simple existence. His apartment is mostly just file cabinets. He doesn't dress especially...
I assume there is something in these file cabinets.
Pretty much every photo he's ever taken.
Okay.
He has a sort of encyclopedic knowledge of fashion, it seems, which is sort of a Ken Hankey, but not with movies, I guess.
Yeah, I was going to say I do not have an encyclopedic knowledge of fashion.
You know some things about movies, I would assume.
Oh, I do know some things about movies, yes. Yeah.
So, but he's just never seemed to have sold out. He won't take money. I think he gets paid from his job, but he doesn't.
I hope he gets paid for his job.
But he doesn't. He's not at the will of his bosses. I think he's able to get away with
doing whatever it is he wants to do.
So, it's just Bill Cunningham himself is just this very enjoyable person, and I think that's what makes the film so enjoyable, because you like being around him, even if it's
on the screen.
And that's what makes it work. So, I'm sure if you have an interest in fashion or in photography, even the movie, or you have a better idea of who Bill Cunningham is than I did before I saw the film, then there's definitely more interest there.
Probably. I mean, I'd never heard of the man before the film was, you know, before it was announced.
See, I wouldn't tell you to go out of your way to see it, but if you ever encountered it, I wouldn't. I'd say watch it.
Okay.
So
this works for me.
Yeah. And there is some heavier stuff in it. There's this scene is a very short scene. It's not even, it's towards the end of the film, but not at the end, where they discuss his sexual orientation and his religion. It's sort of very heartbreaking, because you've sat there and kind of got to know the man, and you never really get an answer of what, besides him being very religious, like he was raised Catholic, and so you can draw your own conclusions, I think, but it's but it's pretty astonishing little movie, I think, in many respects. So what I have to say about it.
Well, I don't have anything to say about it because I haven't seen it.
Well, that's not my fault. Ken, did you see Incendies?
Damned if I didn't, although I think it might be pronounced Encendies.
Well, we're in America where we pronounce it Incendies.
Well, you just be that way. That's I all will. I can say. Anyway,
so you think it, because it's a foreign film, you think it's pronounced Encendies.
Well,
but you
no,
don't
because
know.
It's
You're
French Canadian, I think it's pronounced Encendies.
That's just,
I had 2 years of French in high school.
Well, so did I.
Yeah, well, there you go then. I remember more of it than you do.
Good for you.
Yes, well, we've had this out before. Now put it away. Okay. Yes, this is...
Tell us about this film.
I'm trying to.
That you apparently like a whole lot.
I do like it a whole lot. And after you've seen it, I'll find out whether you like it a whole lot.
Hopefully,
but you haven't seen
it
yet, so we can't really discuss it in any sort of intelligent manner. You can just make snide remarks, which you're good at. And God knows it's a sin to waste a talent. So, I mean, I don't want you not making snide
to yourself.
Remarks.
I can just sit here.
Anyway, it is the second 5-star film I think I've seen this year.
What was the first one?
13 Assassins.
Okay.
No, Drive Angry only got 3 of 4. So, you know.
It's 4 too many.
Well, you're wrong, but that's another story altogether. Anyway.
You can find a replacement for me if you...
Yeah, right.
Exactly. Can't be that wrong.
You're allowed to be wrong twice a year. You have one more opportunity this year.
All right.
Okay. Anyhow. It's a French-Canadian film. It has an extremely convoluted plot. It's essentially structured like a mystery, but it's also not... I mean, the mystery part is really just to keep your interest. I mean, more than anything else, because what you have... I mean, you have a scene that will not make any sense to you at all until the very last part of the film. At the beginning, which is a young man having his head shaved and being forced into military service somewhere in the Middle East with Radiohead's You and Whose Army on the soundtrack, which seems a peculiar choice until it resurfaces later in the film, which actually kind of ties it into what you're going to find out. But the film essentially works on this brother and sister twin who, at the reading of their mother's will, learn that they need to go, that the mother wants the daughter to go find the father that they thought was dead and hand him this envelope. And the brother is supposed to go find a brother they never knew they had and hand him this other envelope. Now, this, of course, requires them going back to the mother's homeland, which is obviously Lebanon, but never named. The film then shifts back and forth between the present and the mother's past. And probably the less you know about this going in, the more enjoyable the film is. The film is still compelling. I figured out where this had to be going well before the halfway point, and it didn't make me lose interest. So I really think the mystery is almost inessential, but it does, it's very shrewdly done. So it would get to a point where you're about at something revelatory, and then it'll go back to the other time period on you. And so it's very shrewdly done. It's a very powerful film. I will grant it that its conclusion is possibly one coincidence too many, but because it works, I'm not going to fault it for it. The acting is splendid. The actress who plays the mother is remarkable. All the performances are good, but she is actually remarkable. It's easily one of the best films I've seen this year. The fact that it did not win the Oscar for Best Foreign Language Film is probably appalling. But then again, the Oscar for Best, you know.
Well, have you seen the film that won?
I would be surprised if it's this good.
Well, you don't know.
I know, but it's kind of like when Pan's Labyrinth didn't win. It's one of those things where it's like, no, the chances of the other film being better than this are slim.
Well.
And in the case of Pan's Labyrinth, were non-existent. So, anyway.
Hopefully your foot does not end up in your mouth.
Well, if it does, it's been there before.
You
and I'm not as limber as I
yes,
used to
I know.
Be. Okay.
You will pull something.
That's probably true, and we won't go there. Anyway, I recommend you see this film. Strongly recommend you see this film. Strongly recommend you see this film.
Okay.
Okay, well, there we have
it. I will.
It All right.
Jesus. What's next? X-Men First Class.
X-Men First Class. X-Men First Class.
Which is sort of a prequel.
It's sort of a prequel. It's sort of a reboot. It's a sort of a, I don't know what you'd call it. I mean, it's fine. I enjoyed it. I had no problem with it. X-Men First Class is a, call it a reboot, call it a prequel, I don't care what you call it. It's essentially the origins story for Magneto and Professor X is what it comes down to. With a few extraneous X people thrown in, and I mean it's very well done. It moves well. I liked all the characters. The biggest problem that I think you're going to find with the film is that James McAvoy is so baby faced that he looks so much younger than Michael Fassbender's Magneto. They're not really, there's only about 2 years separates them in reality, that it just makes it seem kind of like he's a kid. But then again, I think that probably is exaggerated by the simple fact, and I don't know, maybe I'm unusual in this regard. I always find Magneto's point of view much easier to understand than Professor X's. Professor X sees the world a little bit too candy boxed, I think, and, you know, Magneto is the one who makes sense to me, which, not sure what that says. The film is fine. I mean, it's not gonna win any awards. I mean, it's not X2. It's probably not even the X-Men, but it's better than X-Men: Last Stand, and it's better than Wolverine. And bear in mind, I didn't mind Wolverine. X-Men: Last Stand, I minded. Oh yes, I minded X-Men: Last Stand. I'm amused by some of the criticism of it. I'm amused by Roger Ebert's criticism of it, where he's about how difficult it must be to have to put together a team of people who all only have one superpower. And, of course, to me, this is sort of misses the whole point of the X-Men, which is the idea of people who are outsiders or are different are stronger as a unit than they are as individuals. And then the film is very much about this. Of course, this is what made the first two X-Men movies, especially the second one, such prime fodder for gay subtext, because it was, you know, having Bryan Singer and Ian McKellen involved probably had something to do with that. And, I mean, it's here, too. It's the only really believable relationship is between Magneto and Professor X. Everybody else is just sort of a side issue there. I've also been amused by some of the fanboys. There is a cameo in this film by another famous X-Men character, and it's by the person that we associate with playing him. It's probably the most famous character. And there are people slugging it out on message boards that it was so inappropriate that this character and this actor in this cameo said fuck. And do you know why? Because this character is a role model for children everywhere. Now, first of all, I can think of all sorts of reasons why this should not be a role model. But second of all, get a grip, people. It's a fictional character. He doesn't exist in real life. So anyway, X-Men, first class. It may not be first class, but it's certainly...
Coach.
No, it's a little better than coach. I'd say it's business class. Hobo with a shotgun.
Yes. I saw it right before Action Fest. You saw it at
Action Fest. And I've seen it since again. Then, yes.
Does it hold up?
Yes. And yes, that's all you have to say. And I will have to say also, though, that for a film that is incredibly gory, incredibly violent, and does not even begin to understand the bounds of good taste, mm-hmm. or taste of any kind. Almost everybody has some particular thing in this movie I've noticed that they object to. And this is even with gore hounds. On the other hand, my wife, who is used to the things that I might have on television, watched the film, and she is not a gore hound. She was not offended by it. She just said it was pretty silly. I think that really is the thing. It is silly. It's over the top, yeah. And it's so ridiculous, and the gore is so watery. I mean, it is what it looks like. It looks like an exploitation film. It has that kind of cheese to it,
right.
And I think it works better in most respects than, say, Machete or Drive Angry or even Planet Terror, because it's not a surface thing. This is a movie that's kind of made on the same type of budget that the exploitation films would be. What do you say?
I'd still say Planet Terror is better, but...
You think Machete is better?
No.
The Machete, to me, has an ending problem.
Rumor has it you do, too, but we won't get into that.
That's another story altogether. Anyway, I'm really hoping that people will come see this, because this is not a movie. I mean, yeah, it was fine. I didn't mind seeing it, you know, with just me and my wife. At the same time, it certainly was nothing like seeing it with an audience who were hooting and hollering at the screen. I mean, it's the kind of movie that's what it's for. It's for people who are going to, you know, moan and talk back to the screen. And you know, it's not...
That's also a different type of movie.
Yes, that is... people aren't normally... talking back to the screen in those.
And they might be.
I suppose it's possible. But that's the type of... You're talking about the type of movie, though, where they rent you a raincoat.
Yes.
Yeah, okay. It's not that sort of movie at all. And I think what's funny about it, too, is that there's a... you know he knows that this is silly or absurd, right. Or whatever, but there is a kind of really bizarre... sincere quality to Rutger Hauer in this film.
Yeah, he doesn't approach it as a joke.
No.
He makes the movie work.
It makes it funnier, but at the same time, it also makes it weirdly touching on occasion,
yeah.
Especially where she asks him, you know, I'm not really a school teacher. No, I mean, it's It's definitely not for everybody. It isn't. It's not rated because it has something.
It's not supposed to be.
It
for
could
everyone,
never though. Get an R rating. It's that over the top. It's fountains of blood and all sorts of degradation and T and A and you know you name it. If it can offend anybody, it's probably in this movie. The school bus scene seems to particularly bother people.
Well,
didn't bother me.
They all get their comeuppance.
That's so. True. Right. See this movie.
So Thursday, 8 o'clock, Cinema Lounge at the Carolina Asheville. What's going on?
The Thursday Horror Picture Show, of course.
What are we showing?
This week we are showing Robert C. Odmach's Son of Dracula from 1943. Which I claim what?
Is a good Dracula film, except for
no,
one.
No, I would claim
it's an interesting.
It is.
It's a Dracula film.
It had the potential to be one of the great horror films from any era. It's still probably the most interesting horror film from the so-called silver period of universal horror, which is Son of Frankenstein through House of Dracula. Or if you really want to get morbid about it, through Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein. But I personally prefer not to think about Abbott and Costello whenever possible. So, it has a problem, though. It's stylish. It's a throwback to the old-style films. It is more a director's picture than anything else from that era. It's gorgeous to look at. It has the best mechanical bat you've ever seen.
Okay.
It still looks like a mechanical bat, but it's a really good one. Probably the best the movie's ever had, come to think of it. It has this one
something to be said for that.
It is, yeah, I think that's true. And believe me, they're not going to let you miss it either, because this thing, they work it. They work their bat, let me tell you. But this movie has this one really huge problem, and that is that Universal has cast their new big horror sensation, Lon Chaney Jr., as Count Dracula. Oh, boy, this is not a good idea. I mean, you know, Lugosi was conceivably too old for the part, although he was still playing vampires, and in fact he would play Dracula again 5 years later, but he would have been oh so much better. And there's all sorts of stuff that Lugosi could get away with that
anybody would
that
have been
Chaney
better
than cannot get away with. Chaney is I can't be fair about Chaney, because I mean, for as knowledgeable as I am that he is an atrocious actor,
right,
he is so much part of my childhood, I'm kind of used to it.
Okay.
That I don't mind The Wolfman, for example. And I actually do like Man-Made Monster. And he plays a great moron.
But that's not what you but want from your Dracula.
I don't want that from my Dracula. I don't want my Dracula sounding like 6.5 foot of homegrown corn either.
Right.
And that's exactly what he sounds like. I mean, He stumbles. I mean, he's like the Zeppo Marx of horror here. He comes in, puts the emphasis on all the wrong words in a sentence, stumbles over the lines. I mean, I can see Lugosi doing, "I too thought I heard something in the cellar." This does not a line that Lon Chaney Jr. can deliver. And I can even see Lugosi frantically telling the hero when he comes back and finds his coffin ablaze, "Put it out, do you hear me? Put it out." But with Chaney, it comes awfully close to his classic and patented, "Oh, go away, will ya?" I mean, it's so American that it's painful. But there's another side to this movie, and that is the plot is different from most. It's more interesting than most. The leads, the romantic leads, are very different. It's a very different approach to it. The story is actually effective. And you actually care what happens, especially to the hero. And I think that is probably unique in classic era horror movies. I mean, you very rarely give a shit what happens to the hero.
Well, and when you're going up against
when you're going up against Lon Chaney Jr., it's easier to. This is also, by the way, and I don't think you've had this experience, is Chaney Jr. with a mustache.
Why would Dracula have a mustache?
Why not? Actually, he does in the book, so... It's
He's also much uglier.
Yes, that's true.
So, they wanted to ugly him.
That's
up.
That's right. But there's a wonderful moment. It's a director's moment where the camera is in the house, this plantation. This is set in the Deep South, which is kind of interesting too.
How did Dracula get to the Deep South?
By train.
Okay.
The luggage comes in a coffin on the. I'm not kidding. And his name is Alucard, which is Dracula spelled backwards, which Frank Craven figures out like in the third shot of the film, in case you're too dumb. Alucu is, yeah, I get it, you know. Anyway, but there's this wonderful shot. It started. You've got these dancing couples framed through this window, on this porch of the plantation. Then the camera pulls back across the porch and through the shrubbery, and then thanks to the Universal crane, up into the air and then over and down on Dracula. And he turns his head as if the camera has somehow annoyed him and gives it a look. Lugosi could get away with this. Chaney, well, no. But it's a great shot.
And Tuesday,
the Asheville Film Society is showing
At 8.
In the Cinema Lounge at the
Carolina
Asheville.
These are free, by the way.
This is Harmony. Yeah, these are free.
You don't have to pay anything.
Costs you nothing. Yes. And this week is Woody Allen's Stardust Memories.
Yes. Because there'll be a new Woody Allen film
opening this Friday.
Yes.
Which
they pushed up on us.
So it was actually the Stardust Memories was supposed to be the lead-in to Midnight in Paris starting. Well, they changed the date on us. And they didn't tell us.
So
until it was too late. So now it's
we're watching The Magic Christian this week, I think.
Yeah, right. So
they
will have to live with this affront. So
yes.
Anyway.
Perhaps everyone will go watch Stardust Memories or Midnight in Paris
and decide they need to go see Stardust Memories. So do you have something to say about Stardust Memories? I know you've seen this one.
Manhattan's probably my favorite. This one's 1B, I think, for me personally. I don't know how what your list looks like.
Probably about the way my list looks. I mean, it's kind of hard to differentiate in some cases.
But, right.
But these are the two that I gravitate to.
This is like prime.
Yeah,
Allen. This is
Even though in 1980 this was not considered prime Allen, this was seriously attacked because it was thought that it was showing contempt for his audience, which to me it's only contempt for you if you fit the definition of these. The word fanboy did not exist in 1980, but that's what these people are. They're the, you know, someone comes up and wants him to autograph her breast. Someone else wants to sleep with him because it would mean so much to her boyfriend. You know, these are the nutcase fans. And I mean, everybody's got nutcase fans. Anybody who has fans has some nutcase fans. They make for much better storytelling than the normal people. So, you know, I mean, it's only reasonable.
We're safe, though.
Yeah, we're safe.
We have no fans.
That aren't nutcases, no. Actually, I don't think we do.
Well, it's his take on Fellini.
Yes, it's kind of like 8.5 done by Woody Allen.
So and, it's one of the. How would you, like, in his filmography, how would you describe where this, as far as like, it's. I don't want to say it's his strangest film, but it's almost like his most artistic. Would that be fair?
Yeah, I think that may be. I think the only thing is that I think Manhattan is perhaps a little more artistic, and only because it doesn't have a model.
Right.
I mean, so much of this is grounded on how well you know 8.5.
And the way it's plotted and the way it moves.
Yeah, the way it's plotted and the way it moves is
not quite like anything else.
No, it's not like anything else. And I mean, it's not like that either. But in essence, this is kind of the film in which he's addressing the fact that. I mean, this is the film that starts the use of the phrase, the early funny ones.
Right.
Which is, you know, all the people that were pissed off because he was making movies that were about something rather than being sleepers or bananas or take the money and run.
This one sort of straddles.
And this definitely straddles. I mean, this is funny, but it also definitely is not just a funny film. So, you know, but I mean, this is sort of an answer to his critics, and it's sort of a criticism of himself too, because I mean, he meets aliens and wants to know the secret of life, and you know, they flat out tell him, "You want to do mankind a favor? Tell funnier jokes." You know, they also prefer his early funny ones, so.
It's very good.
And speaking of Woody Allen, what opens this Friday?
Midnight in Paris.
That's right. Midnight in
Which
Paris.
Which is getting good reviews.
It's getting...
Unlike...
It's getting even better reviews than Vicky Cristina Barcelona or the grotesquely overrated Match Point.
Right.
This thing's got 92%. Vicky Cristina had 80-something, and Match Point has got 77.
Though
it does, but it's, but reading what they're saying makes me think that maybe this is a case where they're not wrong.
Okay.
But I guess, you know, Friday we'll know, and believe me, I'll be here Friday morning, first thing, to see the first show of this, so I'm officially interested.
In the same vein, we have Judy Moody in the not-bummer summer.
A movie made for God knows who. Certainly,
probably me.
Probably Justin.
I'm going to have to sit through it.
Yeah, that's true. So I guess it's
Ken won't let me watch anything.
Well, I'll let you watch anything you want.
You won't let me review anything.
That's an operative difference. I don't really think you're that much keener on seeing Super 8, are you?
Yeah.
Really?
I'm kind of curious about it, but...
Oh, well, too bad.
Yeah, I know.
We'll negotiate later. Anyway, so it's Judy Moody and the Not-Bummer Summer.
You can break the news to my wife that she has to sit through Judy Moody.
She doesn't have to sit through anything.
Well, she is.
Well, that's her own fault. No, you're not guilt-tripping me on what other people have to sit through. She can come watch Super 8 with me. To hell with you. And the other thing is opening is the
J.J. Abrams.
Steven Spielberg collaborative effort, Super 8, which is combines the typical Spielberg children and aliens, but not a nice alien this time, story with J.J. Abrams. Oh, we're not going to show you the monster and the found footage premise. So, it'll be curious to see what they make of this. But compared to the other three movies that are opening, I don't care.
Does that include Judy Moody?
Well, the other three good movies are interesting.
Well, you
got to
make sure.
Yeah, well, compared to Judy Moody, it's probably pretty aces, but... You know,
Judy Moody might be.
It might be the
wonderful.
It might be the bee's knees and the cat's pajamas. I don't know, but
you won't know.
I hope
I'm not
even
going to let you read the review.
Okay.
I'm going to send it straight to Steve.
Are we done?
Us?
Yeah.
Together? Possibly. I mean, it depends on how bad Judy Moody is.
I can't believe it's the worst thing you've ever sat through.
I don't know. It might be the last straw, though.
So anyway. Anyway, that appears to be it for us. I'm Ken Hankey.
You are.
The movie critic for the Mountain Express. And you are Justin Souther,
yes.
The other movie critic for the Mountain Express. And it is, in fact, the Mountain Express. The fine folks at the Mountain Express who bring you this entertaining podcast. They make the whole thing possible. We have a little bit to do with it, but they are the ones who allow it to happen. And the person who manages to make it make any kind of sense whatsoever is Squire Miami Steve the Colonel Shanafelt Crocodile Hunter.
Esquire.
And I put Squire on the beginning.
But
can't
Esquire.
Be Squire Esquire.
Yeah, he can. Why not?
Well,
he can't
I don't
be
know.
All those other stupid names either.
He could be a bon vivant raconteur, man about town, all around good egg, but he isn't.
Okay, we're done.
All right, I've had it.